This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. Music star David Anthony Burke, a.k.a. D4VD, sick cover-up of a brutal murder and dismemberment of a little girl, Celeste, just 13 years old when the two started dating. Alleged motive: to cover up sex molestation. Was she threatening to go public with their relationship? Good evening. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. I want to thank you for being with us.
I am announcing the charges against David Anthony Burke, the musician known as David, spelled D4VD, in connection with the brutal and horrific murder of Celeste, a 14-year-old at that time. These charges include the most serious charges that a DA's office can bring. That is first-degree murder with special circumstances. The special circumstances being lying in wait, committing this crime for financial gain, or murdering a witness in an investigation.
We learned a lot in that court of law when D4VD, a.k.a. David Anthony Burke, was brought in for the very first time after all these months have passed, and we learned a lot. Straight out to Dave Mack joining us, Crime Stories investigative reporter. Wow, bombshell in the courtroom. We learned that there was a motive for Celeste's murder, that there was no accidental overdose, or for Pete's sake, a 14-year-old girl dying of natural causes. What, a stroke, a heart attack, cancer? No. Their claim, the state's claim, is that apparently little Celeste threatened to go public with their sex relationship, and he killed her with a sharp tool. I mean, that's bad, Dave Mack. Any goodwill D4VD, a.k.a. David, a.k.a. David Anthony Burke, had? It's over. And then to dismember a child's body, her head found in one plastic bag, her body dismembered, found in a second plastic bag called body bags. Were they actually body bags? Were they trash bags? Does it matter? Don't know. Don't care. This is a death penalty qualified case. And don't start up with me, Troy Slayton. He is 21 years old. Go ahead and Google the Supreme Court rulings, Troy. 18 and above are fit for the death penalty in the United States. And yes, I know there's a moratorium in California for now. But to Dave Mack, what happened in the courtroom? Hit me.
It was shocking, Nancy, that D4VD, a.k.a. David Anthony Burke, is charged with first-degree murder, including special circumstances. You mentioned a minute ago, Nancy, any goodwill is now gone. The allegation is that he was lying, that David Anthony Burke was lying in wait. He committed the murder for financial gain. He murdered the witness in an investigation. He mutilated human remains. And they also accuse him of lewd and lascivious acts with an individual under the age of 14. But Nancy, in the allegation, we have hardcore dates of when this happened. April 23rd, 2025, David Anthony Burke invited Celeste to his home in the Hollywood Hills. She showed up, and that's the last time she was ever seen alive. The DA claims that she was murdered that night, that David Anthony Burke was lying in wait inside that home, and he killed her with that sharp instrument. Then, another date, Nancy, May 5th, 2025.
Hold on. Dave Mack, let's just digest what you just said. Straight out to Troy Slayton. He is a veteran criminal defense attorney joining us out of this jurisdiction of L.A. Whoa, wait a minute. You're a candidate for the L.A. Superior Court? Is that true?
I am. I'll be on the ballot this June.
Oh, dear Lord in heaven. You on the bench. The prosecutors are going to cry if you win. The defense attorneys will dance in the halls. But that means you can't join us. So, okay, that's out. Troy Slayton, can we talk about this? Lying in wait. Did you hear what Dave Mack just said? Lying in wait. That is an aggravating circumstance because it tells a jury the person had plenty of time to cool down and not do the act. They were that intent on the murder, they lie in wait. That's creepy.
Well, it's not just creepy, but in the California jurisdiction, Nancy, it's a special circumstance. And it's one of the reasons why District Attorney Nathan Hochman has decided to potentially seek life in prison without possibility of parole or even the death penalty. Now, I know that you mentioned in the warm-up that there is a moratorium on the death penalty, but that can change when the governor changes. We're having an election here in November. In June is the primary.
Troy
in November,
Slayton.
We can have a new governor who decides to reimpose the death penalty.
You know, I don't care about politics. I could not give a flying fig about politics. They all
but in this
lie.
Case,
it's
it
like
affects,
swimming through
it
a cesspool.
Whether or not the death penalty.
Exactly.
It affects whether or not a person
and
can
I guarantee
be
you, whoever is running may have a good shot, since it's now coming out that the California governor got somebody to pay $1.something million to buy his own books. No comment. Don't care. I care what it means for this. You're saying that a new governor could try to get into office by claiming they're going to get rid of the moratorium on the death penalty.
They could, Nancy. And that's why the district attorney's office here, a very experienced prosecutor has been assigned by Nathan Hochman, Beth Silverman, and she could very well decide to seek the death penalty in this case. This case is death penalty eligible. And even if they decided not to seek the death penalty, I can tell you that the district attorney's office is going to seek life without possibility of parole.
Okay, back to you, Dave Mack. Can you pick it back up on lie in wait? Oh, hold on just a moment. Joining me, Dr. Bethany Marshall, because you know what I noticed, Dave Mack, is no matter how much I put it to Troy Slayton, he ignored the fact that I was asking about lying in wait and instead went off down the garden path about the law surrounding the death penalty in politics. Dr. Bethany Marshall, renowned psychoanalyst, joining us out of this jurisdiction, L.A., she is the author of Deal Breakers. You can see her now on Peacock and Bravo and find her at drbethanymarshall.com. Dr. Bethany Marshall, why is it so chilling to think he, according to prosecutors, D4VD, let's see D4VD and some of his photos in his blood-drenched outfits. Now, these blood-drenched outfits were all marketing tools. Okay. There you go. And there's a lot more. And Dr. Bethany, that's a whole nother can of worms. Oh, good gravy. This takes on a whole new meaning. When I got to think about a 14-year-old little girl getting dismembered by him. Freakazoid. I wonder if there's any way I could get this in aggravating circumstances. But that said, what he, Troy Slayton, doesn't want to talk about is the act, Bethany, of lying in wait. You know what, Dr. Bethany, every time the twins come home, I have a hiding spot and it never gets old. I jump out right as they turn the corner and it scares them. And the lying in wait, I can hear their, I hear them come in the back door. I hear their footsteps. I can tell by the way their footsteps sound who it is. And I jump out at the right moment. It always scares them. That said, the lying in wait. You know the victim is coming. You know you're going to kill her. And you wait for the moment to jump out and murder a 14-year-old little girl that, according to prosecutors, you have been having sex with and you don't want your music career down the crapper because people find out about statutory. Bam!
But you know, Nancy, it also suggests that there's something perverse and creepy about why he killed her that's beyond trying to protect his music career. And that is that he has all those shirts with the blood spatters all over them. That tells me that perhaps he was also sadistic. We already know that there was a power differential between the two of them, not just because of age, but in a way that follows the pattern of domestic violence. He isolated her from her friends, isolated her from her families. There's that one picture where she's holding the Louis Vuitton purse in front of her face. So she's already, you know, hiding from the people around her who could rescue her from this situation. We know that victims of domestic violence.
Oh, there it is, Bethany. And almost every picture right they took together, he has her hiding her face.
He has her hiding. This is domestic violence right in that picture. And Nancy, women are more likely to get killed when they're about to leave the violent relationship. Always, always, always. But you know, Nancy, those blood spattered shirts, that tells me that there is a bit of a glorification of the eventual slaughter. I don't see homicide, I see slaughter. The words are very important in my field. And when you look at that, it means that this was the final glory act. I think it's easy in the eyes of the law to say, oh, you know, he's witness tampering. That's a very safe phrase. We all know what that means. Why don't we use the word slaughter the victim, because it's sexually and emotionally exciting? I think that's what we're really talking about here.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Sexually and emotionally exciting. Dr. Bethany, you just took me off course, and I'm actually glad you did, because I hadn't thought of a sexual excitement from murdering a little girl. I want you to explain to me the frame of mind of someone that lies in wait. Now, for me, that's a technical legal term that I use as an aggravating circumstance to either seek the death penalty or show intent to a jury. Intent, of course, only takes the flash of a moment, the blink of an eye to form under the law. There's no required time for intent. But the lying in wait aspect as an entire cold and calculating nature to the murder.
But not only that, Nancy, it is wanting to terrify the victim and also wanting to render the victim unaware. So you think with pedophilia, there's this broad age difference between the two. She was not aware initially that she was being groomed. We think of serial killers, you know, cutting off the head of the victim. They don't want the victim to be aware of what they're about to do. That's a part of the perverse nature of this type of homicide, is that there's a stalking component, Nancy, like a cold-hearted, a cold-blooded stalking component. But also in all perversions, you do not want the victim to be completely aware of what you are about to do. So I wonder what their sex play was like throughout this relationship. I wonder what he did to her. Did he torture her?
Why are you even saying that, Dr. Bethany Marshall? Their sex play. A child cannot consent to sex play. That is certainly putting perfume on the pig. I'm going to let you think about what you just said for just a moment. Dave Mack with me, Crime Stories investigative reporter. What can you tell me about allegations a sharp object or a sharp instrument was used to murder Celeste?
That's what we're being told by the complaint that was filed. They're just saying sharp instrument. There has not been a coroner's report yet. We haven't seen that. Hoping it comes out to, you know, in the near future. But right now, that's all we have. Sharp instrument was used in the homicide of Celeste.
There is a medical examiner's report, but it's been under seal for some time pursuant to request by the police. That's got to be lifted. Okay, Joe Scott Morgan joining me, professor of forensics, Jacksonville State University. He is the author of Blood Beneath My Feet on Amazon. He is a star of a hit podcast, Body Bags, with Joe Scott Morgan. But for my purposes, he is a death investigator with over 10,000 death scenes of all sorts under his belt. If she's been dismembered in the most brutal way in two body bags, head in one of them, this little girl, let me see, Celeste, this little girl's head was severed from her body. Her, 13 when she started, quote, dating D4VD, a.k.a. David Anthony Burke. Her head was severed from her body. Think about it. Think about the effort of severing her head and what ghouls were around when it was done. Okay, that, the rest of her body dismembered. It's not like her, the rest of her body was intact and put in a bag. It was dismembered too. So with all of that dismembering going on, how in the world do they know at the medical examiners that she was murdered with a sharp object? For those of you just joining us, D4VD David Anthony Burke has pled not guilty in a court of law. We'll see about that. Okay, Joe Scott, hit it.
One word, Nancy, hemorrhage. That's what they're going to be looking for. So they've talked about the sharp instrument, all right? When you have an attack that occurs, you know, in life, blood is coursing through our veins. If he stabbed her, for instance, first off, stab wounds are going to look very specific, say on her torso, her chest, even her face, Nancy. And yeah, even in an advanced decompositional state, microscopically, with tissue sections, we can actually appreciate if there is indwelling hemorrhage. Hemorrhage is indicative of an injury that occurred
Lord,
in life.
Oh, dear Lord, man, wait. I'm sorry. I did not ask you to read out of Britannica. Speak English. Regular people talk. Street talk. Vernacular, as I like to say. Regular, commonplace vernacular. Hemorrhages. You mean bruises. But can you go in depth on that, because her whole body has been dismembered? How in all right. of that, it's like putting together a jigsaw puzzle. How do you find a hemorrhage and differentiate between a bruise, which is a hemorrhage, and her body getting cut apart, Joe Scott?
Because the dead don't bleed is what it comes down to. So when a body is dismembered, you're not going to have hemorrhaging. You're saying bruising, but you're not going to have hemorrhaging in that area. Let's say an arm.
Oh, you mean bleeding?
So you're not going to, if you have an arm removed from the torso, that area, when you look at that tissue microscopically, Nancy, it's not going to show, it's not going to show bleeding into the surrounding tissue. All right. However, if you have a sharp force injury that tracks back to the fatal event, you will have specific signs of hemorrhage in there. That's because blood at that point in time was still coursing through her body, Nancy. And this is, and listen, it's not easy to do this because she is in such an advanced state of decomposition, because we're talking months and months and months in that LA heat in the frunk of that car. You think about that, and that's going to compromise. I think that's probably one of the reasons it's taken so long for them to make a specific diagnosis here. I've been involved in cases like this in the past, and you have to go over every jot and tittle to try to disseminate between what happened in the antemortem or prior to death state as opposed to the postmortem state, Nancy.
Hello, my name is David. Pronounced David, not D4VD. I'm from Queens, New York. I'm in Houston now. I am a gamer. I love video games. I wanted to be a professional gamer before music. That's actually what pushed me into music, was getting copyright strikes on YouTube. And I kind of just used my own music in my montages after my mom told me to, because I was crying to her about it.
That from our friends at Genius. And he is very concerned that I might call him D4VD. His name is David Anthony Burke, and he has been charged with murder one, which is a whole nother can of worms. Murder one. Continuous of a child under 14, which means the sex abuse started when she was 13, when they first started, quote, dating. Mutilation of human remains. Wow. We've been waiting. Justice for Celeste. Justice for Celeste. Now, do we have it? H-E-L-L-N-O. No justice until there is a sentence. This is a death penalty case, but will the prosecution seek the death penalty or go hide under their desk the way the prosecutor did in the Brian Koberger case? We'll see what happens. That said, much is being made of how this case will be proved, because the killer, allegedly David Anthony Burke, dismembered the body. Time passed. Her body decomposed. Witnesses disappeared. Their memories faded. Straight out to Brian Fitzgibbons joining us. Director Operations, USPA Nationwide Security. He leads a team of investigators around the world. He is a former Marine. He is an Iraqi war vet, which I believe says it all. Fitzgibbons, when you are looking for missing people, when you are putting together a case, see, I love forensics. Joe Scott and I could talk about forensics all night long. Never get tired of it. Fingerprints, for fair hair, fiber, mitochondrial DNA, mixed DNA, nothing could make me happier than to delve into those intricacies. But practical matter, a jury likes to hear from witnesses. I've been thinking about the D4VD case a long time and knew in my heart, once her body was found dismembered, that we would need witnesses to say, I saw them, fill in the blank. How do you find the witnesses, and how do you gently insist, convince them to testify?
Yeah, so something that we've been saying right from the beginning of this case, Nancy, and the DA in the press conference alluded to it. There was a tremendous surveillance effort on D4VD, David, and his associates. For them to have this part of the
timeline. There's Neo. See him? Remember him, Brian Fitzgibbons? Neo, Neo Langston, that went and hid out under his mommy's bed in another state, and we had to get a material witness warrant to drag him back in by his toenails. He did not want to testify, but he did. Speaking of witnesses, I sorry to interrupt. I just wanted you to see Neo. They were former best friends. Okay, go ahead, Brian. I just wanted you to see Neo, one of those witnesses.
Yeah, and you at least had Neo, who was refusing to cooperate at the beginning. So now the DA and the chief of police present a hard timeline. April 23rd, Celeste Rivas was murdered. May 5th, her body was dismembered. What does that tell us? There's some evidence, be it from a witness or digital evidence from witnesses talking about this case, that point to this timeline. That didn't come just from the forensic evidence. This comes from somebody associated to the murder of Celeste Rivas that has either cracked or been found out through a digital investigation or a surveillance effort.
Today, I am announcing the charges against David Anthony Burke, the musician known as David, spelled D4VD, in connection with the brutal and horrific murder of Celeste, a 14-year-old. These charges include the most serious charges that a DA's office can bring. That is first-degree murder with special circumstances. The special circumstances being lying in wait, committing this crime for financial gain, or murdering a witness in an investigation. These special circumstances carry with it, along with the first-degree murder charge, a maximum sentence of life without the possibility of parole or the death penalty. The determination on whether or not the district attorney's office will seek the death penalty will be made at a later time.
The elected district attorney in LA announcing the charges and special circumstances. There's more.
There are additional charges against Mr. Burke, including continuous sexual acts, lewd and lascivious sexual acts with an individual under 14 years old, and mutilating a human remains of a body. On April 23rd, 2025, as been alleged by the complaint, Celeste, a 14-year-old at that time, went to Mr. Burke's house in the Hollywood Hills. She was never heard from again. On September 8th, 2025, as alleged in the complaint, Miss Celeste remains, her dismembered and decomposed remains were found in two bags inside of a front trunk of a car registered to Mr. Burke.
What were they thinking? Now, we have learned through a witness through a friend of our program that he observed the car being moved multiple times through door cam in the neighborhood. And I pressed him to get him to admit it was Neo. He never would admit it on air. There's more regarding the special circumstances from the elected DA. Listen.
Those special circumstances are lying in wait. That Celeste went to Mr. Burke's home on the night of April 23rd, 2025, as alleged in the complaint, at his invitation, and again, was not heard from again. The second is a special circumstance being that this murder was committed for financial gain. As the evidence will show in court, the financial gain was for Mr. Burke to maintain his very lucrative musical career that Celeste was threatening.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
In addition to Brian Fitzgibbons, USPA Nationwide Security, Scott Eicher is joining us. He is at Precision Cellular Analysis. He is a founding member of the FBI CAST Cellular Analysis Survey Team, homicide detective, 12 years, Norfolk, Virginia, and has worked countless cases. Scott, thank you for being with us. You heard Brian Fitzgibbons discussing getting witnesses. There had to be a witness that saw what happened, because they've got it down to a T that this all went down April 23. Was that the day her cell phone was turned off and it was never turned back on? Was it turned on at a certain juncture and text messages sent to her family in parlance or vernacular that was not hers? Just tell me what we can learn. We know from a source inside the police station, inside LAPD, that there was a huge wall of cellular digital analysis, putting various parties together at the same time where they traveled. Explain how they're going to prove this digitally, Scott Eicher.
Well, as you know, every case has just a ton of digital evidence. And in this case, we're looking at not only Burke's phone, but Celeste's phone, but all the phones of people that they communicate with on a daily basis. So we're going to get the records from the cellular records to determine where they were at on the day of April 23rd when Celeste went over to the house. So then we can start looking at, you know, not only who was there at the time that she was murdered, but the communications prior to that, the lying in wait, the planning of the event. Then we look at, you know, the events that happened after her death. You mentioned the car being moved. So every time that's a furtherance of the event that we can add to the digital evidence aspect. And it's not just the content of the communications, the location of the devices, but all the social media. We're looking at pictures right now of all the social media that these two have been putting out. And we know Burke has put out a lot more because he's a magician. He's got to be on social media. All those are tracked and give us some locational information when we go to the applications where they were posted.
So we know, Scott Eicher, Precision Cellular Analysis, that phone records had been subpoenaed for everyone that lived in that home and everyone that frequented that home. And there was in and out all the time. Those phones were tracked to see when they were traveling, most likely with David Anthony Burke. We're probably going to look for Neo's phone if he was moving the car, allegedly. We know he has turned state's witness. He has not been charged. No one else has been charged. If they have not been charged, Troy Slayton, veteran defense attorney, then they have no grounds to plead the Fifth Amendment and remain silent if they're not going to be charged or if they've been given immunity.
Well, that's true. You can't claim a Fifth Amendment right not to incriminate yourself if you've been given immunity. But just because you haven't been charged doesn't mean that you don't have the right to remain silent. So I think if anybody feels that they have any criminal culpability in this case as an accessory after the fact or as part of a conspiracy to commit murder, then absolutely they don't want to talk. So any experienced attorney worth their salt is going to make sure that any person that's in David's orbit is going to seek a deal to seek immunity. So that way they don't have criminal exposure in this case as well.
Dave Mack, where are the parents in all of this? They reported Celeste as a runaway once and then went radio silent.
And Nancy, they stayed fairly silent until yesterday, and they were at court. They were there, and we were told, the media was told, that they would be talking, making a statement to the press, but that did not happen. So ever since this case exploded last September, the family has remained silent since the first week, and we still have not heard from them right now.
Question, Dave Mack, were they ever spotted out looking for their daughter?
No, Nancy. They reported her missing, and here's the kick. They reported her missing, and she was then, Celeste was then seen back at the home in the complex area in the weeks and months following the initial report of her being missing, but she was never reported as having come back home. The family never alerted authorities. Oh yeah, she's not missing anymore. We know where she is. A lot of questions around the family, what they knew and what they didn't know. But bottom line is they did report her missing first week of April, 2024. And Celeste was seen back in their home area after she was reported missing.
Not another word. Well, the parents have not been charged with anything as of right now. Troy Slayton, veteran defense attorney out of L.A. Troy, in many jurisdictions, failure to report your child missing is a crime.
It very well could be. And it doesn't seem like the family was too concerned. It seems to me that they knew. Now, look, a parent can't consent to have their child engage in sexual activity at age 13 or 14. There is no evidence that they were coming around the house and that they were out, you know, searching for their daughter. Doesn't appear that they were being very vigilant. I'm not blaming them. I'm not saying that it's the parents' fault. I'm just saying that we don't have any evidence.
You would never. Well, you know what? I will.
And what we
Where
also
were
don't
they?
Have, Nancy,
Where were they
we don't
during
have any,
all of this? We, Celeste is dead now.
We don't have anyone. What? We don't have anyone publicly, Nancy, who has come out and said that they saw a murder or that they knew about a murder. All we know is that a person was found dead at David's house or in his car that was registered to him, that she last went to his house and that she was found in a car. There's a whole lot in the middle of this chain, Nancy, that the prosecutors
Troy
are going to have to prove in order to get a murder conviction here.
I don't know why you're saying we don't know, because we haven't had a trial yet. That's why we don't know. But the LA district attorney did say this.
Is there physical evidence that ties David to this murder?
There is physical evidence and there is forensic and digital evidence that we intend to present in court to prove these charges beyond a reasonable doubt.
David Anthony Burke, a.k.a. D4VD, pleads not guilty. And interesting, this was not a grand jury indictment. There was a grand jury that investigated, called witnesses in the case. Now there will be a preliminary hearing. And Dave Mack, that's like a mini trial where we will hear state's witnesses, probably just state's witnesses. Isn't that set for April 23?
It is. Nancy, by law, this preliminary hearing has to be held within 10 days. And so right now we're looking at a possible preliminary hearing as early as April 23rd.
If you know or think you know anything about the murder of this beautiful teen girl, Celeste Rivas, please dial 213-486-6890. Repeat, 213-486-6890. 9-0. The state and the defense both building their case now. Tonight, we remember an American hero, Deputy Sheriff Thomas LeMay of LaFleur County, Oklahoma. Just 30, shot in the line of duty, leaving behind a 5-year-old daughter. American hero, Deputy Sheriff Thomas LeMay. Good night, friend. This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.